This is Amy Cohen Epstein, founder, president, and executive director of the Lynn Cohen Foundation and the SEAM, the Series for Education and Awareness in Medicine. In this podcast, I'll be interviewing researchers, doctors, scientists, female founders, entrepreneurs to talk about women's health, wellness, and preventive care. Take a listen. So excited. This is my second interview with sisters, and the last one was really fun, so you guys have a lot to live up to. But I'm with Whitney Walder and Courtney Harrow, and you both work together, which kind of blows me away because I sort of work with my sisters, but I couldn't really fully. I love them, but I don't think I could actually work with them on a daily basis. And you have a podcast called Hey Sis, Eat This. So let's start by just talking about that and why you started it and what was the motivation and how it's been.
Well, Amy, thank you for having us. We're very excited. And I think we can work together because we live in separate states. So that's very helpful. But Whitney, do you want to tell her a little bit about how we got this all started?
Sure. It kind of goes back 20 years ago when we first lived together in Los Angeles. We're 6 years apart and we weren't really close until we got older and I was in college and out of that, you know, kind of baby phase. And we decided to live together in Los Angeles and got an apartment. And at the same time, our parents were going through a divorce and 33 years of marriage, and that ended. And it was really tough on our family. Really, really tough.
Are you two the only siblings?
Yes. Okay. Just the two of us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was tough. And during that time, our mother was 55 years old, did not have a career. She was a wonderful, you know, homemaker, but found herself kind of at this pivotal moment and needed to find her passion and something that she could make money. And she knew she was a great cook. She always made incredible dinners for us growing up. And she started her own catering company. And
she was in Dallas.
Okay. Yes. Yeah,
she was always entertaining. Our parents were always entertaining growing up. It was just something she knew how to do. So she just went out on a limb and started making brownies for people. And that kind of took off. And from then she started this company and was employed at various churches as the, you know, primary catering person at these mm-hmm. churches. And we really always admired her for being able to start something later in life and be successful at it. And at that same time, Whitney and I, living together, started cooking and entertaining a lot, kind of making some of the recipes that she would tell us about. And funny enough, we used to pretend like we messed things up all the time. And we'd be like, oh, cooking with the Ashley sisters. Like we needed our own show, you know? So we kind of foreshadowed that earlier in our life. And then, you know, we had our own jobs, families, everything, you know, life happened. And then the pandemic happened. And we were still cooking a lot, and this time over FaceTime and every day talking about what we were eating, what we were making, also talking about it in my mom's Texas accent, like, oh, did you make mama's, you know, chili today? And kind of joking around. And her husband said, you guys need a podcast about your mom and food. And then took us about a year to develop, and that's how Hey Sis, Eat This started.
I love it. What are like those amazing recipes that you make separately or together that just bring back the memories of childhood and home and your mom?
Like, it's funny. We just made it. Our dad's 75th was this weekend. So we made some of her recipes for him. He still asks for them.
We made the beef tenderloin, which is something that we would have every Christmas or any kind of special occasion. And my mom takes like beef tenderloin, cuts slits in it, stuffs it with garlic, puts Worcestershire all over it, salt and pepper, wraps it in bacon.
Oh my God.
And then you grill it and then bake it. And it's just delicious. Always served with a horseradish sauce. We've kind of also done variations where we'll do like a chimichurri sauce or a demi-glace or something like that. But that is definitely a staple at the Ashley house.
And what are the sides? What size did you make?
Oh, this weekend we did smashed potatoes, like roasted smashed potatoes, and our dad's favorite salad, which is just a mixed green salad with candied pecans, blue cheese, and thinly sliced apples in a vinaigrette. It's funny because our dad will be like, you know, they have a good relationship now, partly because this podcast has kind of brought us all back together in a way,
so nice.
Which has been really nice. It's been very healing for our family. But he'll call us up. He's like, do you have your mom's chicken noodle soup recipe? You know, like, because he doesn't want to call her. So we're sort of the gatekeepers of all of her recipes when she's willing to give them to us, which sometimes she's still not, but
that's funny.
Yeah. So yeah, we're always cooking her recipes and teaching each other, and she still caters a little bit. So that's like our relationship is talking about food and sharing our love of food and recipes and entertaining.
And I live three houses down from her in Dallas.
Oh, wow.
So when she's doing these catering jobs, she's like, can you come down here and taste this pesto I made? I don't know if it's too spicy or if I need to add more salt or...
So. Where is she originally from with this accent?
Dallas.
And why do neither of you have this?
I don't know, because I've lived in LA for 30 years. And okay.
Yeah, I went to college in Arizona and then I moved out here to LA.
Okay.
And so I
you just lost. Did you lose
there.
It on purpose?
You know, I don't know.
I lost mine a little bit on purpose, but we still say y'all all the time.
Yes.
And, you know, when I go to Texas and after a few margaritas, I can kind of turn it on. But yeah.
Her daughters are like, do you have a Texas accent yet?
Yeah. I think my husband would like it if I had more of a Texas accent.
Totally.
I think he thinks it's kind of sexy, but
And Texas is very specific because it's not Southern.
Very twang.
It's Texas.
Twang.
Yeah. It's a really specific accent.
Well, we laugh because she'll be like, I want an Asti. And it sounds like Asti, you know, Asti. And it's like, we just make fun of it all the time in good fun.
Yes.
When I went to the South for college, I had never heard of sweet tea.
Oh,
ever.
Yeah.
That was a real winner.
Mama Ashley doesn't like sweet tea. She
doesn't
like
it. Funny.
Like, I gained like
Texas,
20 pounds from drinking sweet tea freshman year of college. I didn't really know the sweet meant like a pound of sugar in one cup of tea.
Yeah.
In Texas, there isn't a lot of sweet tea. That, I think, is
more
in
Southern.
Yeah. Other Southern states.
Yeah.
We don't do sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Okay. I have a couple of places I want to dig in here.
Yeah.
One is, you know, this incredible special relationship with your mom through food. So when you were going through a hard time, when your parents got divorced and it really was hard on your family, did food continue during that time? Or was it something you girls picked up when you were younger to cook, or your love of food? Or did you just sort of, it was, and food was a part of your, like, your lifestyle? Because some families really center around the kitchen.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Some don't. It sounds like you all did.
I don't feel like she ever really had us help her cook much when we were at home. But when she started her catering company and we were in our 20s, we started helping her. Like, if we flew in for holidays and she had a big, you know, days of Christmas catering and stuff, we'd get in that kitchen with her and help her cook.
Like, what stuff? Do you remember? Like, can you smell it?
And what else? I mean, we're talking about
making 80 sandwiches for a ladies' luncheon at the church.
Yeah.
Right. And we would be in that industrial kitchen with her. And I think that's sort of also where we learned to cook for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we can do a dinner party for 60, no problem. Like, we did learn that from her, but we enjoyed it so much. And when we started entertaining a lot, our friends, and we'd pack 75 people into our 2-bedroom apartment on Easter Sunday or, you know, Halloween or New Year's, and just have these blowout parties.
Right.
And we'd cook everything.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was like kind of casserole stuff, like blue cheese, chili, green. What was it? The
blue cheese, green chili grits.
Yeah. Green chili grits. And
we
do like the tenderloin and we would do, you know, mom's hot sauce and chips and like, it would just be a smorgasbord of stuff. Yeah. And half the time we'd be like drunk, you know, trying to like get it all out. And, you know, it was always like a mess, but we're a lot more organized now. Whitney's a big believer in G sheets when we're entertaining and stuff like that. But,
and Whitney, do you have kids?
No.
And so who do you cook for now?
I cook for my husband. I cook for all my friends. We tried to have kids for 3 years. We went through IVF, and it was, if anyone has gone through it, knows just how hard the journey is.
Yeah.
And we kind of got to the end of that point where we'd done the transfers and it didn't work. And we said, you know what? We are so happy with each other.
Yeah.
Found each other later in life. And we're going to still have an amazing life together.
Yeah.
And we're very, very fortunate that we have a lot of friends that have great kids.
Yeah.
My sister's kids, obviously included, that we get to kind of be the fun aunt and uncle all the time. And, you know, I cook with those kids. I cook with her kids. I love to throw parties. I'm getting ready for my big Galentine's, my annual Galentine's brunch.
I love that. What are you going to make?
I have 13 women coming over.
Okay.
And I'm making, and people like fly in for it. I have
really?
Two people coming.
I kind of want to fly in for this.
I know.
Bring it. Come next year. Come this week. I'm going to make a goat cheese tomato pie. So you take like a pie crust and you do like a mixture of goat cheese and
creme fraiche.
Creme fraiche. Yeah. And herbs. And then, you know, beautiful heirloom tomatoes that you put on top and bake that. And then I'm also going to make, we've been making a lot of this. My mom's been catering and making this as like a butternut squash salad that has toasted walnuts, craisins, and then it's got a really unique vinaigrette where you take shallots with red wine vinegar and you kind of boil it down. And then you drizzle that over with some olive oil over arugula. And then I've never made these before, but I'm really excited about it. It is, you take puff pastry and you cut it into thinner slits and then you spread Nutella on it. So how bad can that be?
Oh my God.
And then you slice apples just into like little half moons and you line that at the top, fold the bottom of the sheet over and you roll it up and it's like little roses. And then
oh
you
my
bake
gosh.
Them. Yes.
Okay, so have you been trolling Instagram for Valentine's?
Seriously? That's amazing. So, and how long does it take you to prepare for this?
So I'm, you know, still in LA right now. So I have to get back immediately.
I wanted her to stay an extra night. Yes. She's like, I've got to have a Valentine's.
I'm like, there's no way I can't. Like tomorrow I'll start prepping the things that I can. Like I might roast the butternut squash and get that salad together because it's like better when it marinates sometimes.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'll definitely do all my shopping tomorrow. Like she said, I'm a big G-sheet person.
Yeah, she plans it
And
out.
What's funny is before G-sheets even kind of existed, Courtney would take a piece of white paper and a ruler. And she would mark out the day and
when
times.
When to start cooking.
When to start.
I mean, a lot of this prep came from our mom training us how to do this when she was cooking for 100 people. So we've definitely gotten so much of that from her.
And your mom did it out of an industrial kitchen, you mentioned, not her house. So that's kind of unusual.
She started out doing it out of her house, but then she grew. She had
that's
to get
amazing.
A commercial kitchen.
That's really I mean, that's a big step. That's
it was.
A big deal.
Yeah. She had people that worked for her, several people that worked for her.
Wow.
And now she's retired, but we joke that the podcast has driven a lot of business back to her. So she's always like, I'm just so busy. I don't know what I'm doing. And she keeps like taking jobs and stuff.
That's so
cool. I don't want to work anymore. Yeah. We're like, well, you don't have to take the job. She's like, I know I don't, but you know, it's so-and-so and they asked me to.
Yeah.
And
it's her book club every month. Yes. Every Monday, there's like a book club. And we're like, what'd you make? She's like, I made Neiman Marcus White chicken chili. That's what she made this week for book club. But I'll say that I was supposed to do a Galentine's. Because Whitney wanted to do it for the podcast, like each do one.
Yeah.
And I backed out. I was like, I just can't until this bat mitzvah's over. I cannot do one more party. So
fully understand.
I'm just, I might go to lunch with some gals, but that's as far as I
have a lot more
it.
Free time on my hands with no kids. So I am able to do that.
This is amazing. This is really cool. I love it. I love it. And the other thing I thought was really interesting about your mom, because I feel like it comes back to her. Yeah. And by the way, when you break into her accent, it's just like too much. I can't handle it. So I keep thinking about her and I really want to meet her.
Oh, she's great.
Is this amazing? You know, you just sort of blipped on it, but this starting to work at 55. Mm-hmm. And obviously she was, I don't use the word forced, but it like, she fell into that because of situation of divorce, getting divorced from your dad.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of find it fascinating for a lot of women whose either careers kind of gear up, you know, in that 40s and 50s range, or they start. And it's such a difference from when, you know, I'm older than you guys. It's such a difference even from when like my mom was that age, because it was much harder. And now I feel like, your 50s is quite young. My sister and I are 11 months apart.
Yeah.
I have two sisters, but my sister Erin and I are 11 months apart. We're very close. And she's about to turn 49. I'm about to turn 48. Actually, we have 2 weeks a year.
I'm older than you then.
You are? Yeah. I thought I was older than you. No, you look younger. Where we are the same age for 2 weeks. And she's like, I can't believe I'm going to be 49. Like 50 seems so old and it's next year I'm turning 50. And I said, but it's not. Like 50 is not, it's not old. We are in such great shape. Like, yes. I feel like in many ways, I'm so much more confident with myself and what I'm doing. So this idea that your mom, yeah. how old is she now?
She's 74. Be,
yeah, 74. Yeah.
So 20 years ago, we didn't feel the same way about our 50s. Mm-mm. We as in all women.
Yeah.
And so it's really admirable and remarkable that your mom not only just said, I'm going to start doing something and I want, you know, to make some money, but she turned it into a real business. Legit business in an industrial yeah. kitchen. That's right. like a I big mean,
she,
deal.
I think she spent, you know, our entire childhood volunteering at the schools, always doing stuff, working for free. Mm-hmm. And I think once she got this flavor of making her own money and feeling that independence, a newfound confidence came with that. Mm-hmm. And she thrived. And that's part of our journey with this whole podcast, is seeing her become so independent and proud of herself. And also, you know, I think for us being in our, you know, I'm in my late 40s and Whitney early 40s, like we were like, we can do anything we want. Look at what mom did. So let's start this podcast. Why not? You know?
Yeah.
And she's definitely the inspiration behind it all.
I love it.
Yeah.
And we talked a little bit about your health journey, Whitney, mm-hmm. with IVF mm-hmm. and how that goes. And it's not easy. Even if you end up with a child, it's not easy. And I know yeah. lots of women that have gone through that process, and it takes mm-hmm. its toll. It takes its toll emotionally and mentally and physically. So let's talk a little bit about, I know you have a health journey too. Let's talk a little bit about that. And I don't know if there's a way we can tie in food to it, but I feel like there is in terms of the comfort of it. But can we just switch gears a little bit and talk about your each individual like health journeys?
Absolutely. Yeah. Gosh, I mean, it seems like a lifetime ago, but then it doesn't.
Yeah.
But we got married, moved to Dallas, and immediately started to try to have a kid. And I was 39. And, you know, Courtney got pregnant like that. My mom got pregnant like that. And my journey was very, very different. Like, I went into my fertility doctor and she was like, you're the special girl at the party and you don't really want to be. And I was like, cool.
That's a really harsh way to put it.
She was just honest.
Yeah.
And I appreciated it. Because there's so much sugar coating that goes on with the IVF program. Mm-hmm. Like people are like, oh, it's going to happen. It's going to happen for you. And when you're going through it, there's so many emotions of, is it? Should I get excited? Should I not get excited? And it's really about taking care of yourself. And 3 years of going through it, there were so many different stages for me and my husband. You know, I think that gets kind of left out too about what these men go through, and it's a very lonely place for them because they don't have the women to talk about. They don't have their sisters. They don't have.
And you get mean with all those hormones too.
I mean, there's so many hormones pumping mm-hmm. through you. Oh my God.
Gosh. What a, I mean, I had
gained like 20 pounds. And
I had to be like, I don't want to kill my mother. I don't want to divorce my husband. This is just the medication.
Yeah.
You know, it's real. And there was a lot going on and you can't work out because of that. So you can't really release those endorphins. Yeah. And I think that there were two things that really got me through that. And part of that was this kind of Courtney and I cooking because I'd moved to Dallas and that is our love language. It's something that we love to do. Mm-hmm. So that was part of a lot of just a focus to give you, to give me of like, I'm going to cook this amazing thing I've never cooked before, or we're going to have friends over to do that. And then I think the second part was getting into meditation, getting into manifestation. I listened to a lot of books and podcasts and stuff about it because I'm not a religious person. And I struggle with trying to find that balance of turning it over to the universe, trying to let go of that control, because really there isn't any control in that situation with IVF. It is a crapshoot. You do everything by the book and it may or may not happen. But there was a point where I read something that you take a box, you write down what you want in it, you put it in the box, you let it sit there for a week, you go back and you burn it. So I told my husband, I said, I really want to do this with you. I need this. Let's do it. I'm getting like chills about it. Mm-hmm. And we both did it and we get back the end of the week. I'm like, what did you write? We like burn it. And he said, I'm going to get a bit clumped about it too, because it was, I said, of course, I want a baby. And he said, I just wrote that. I hope we're happy either way at the end of this journey. And that was for me. His was for me. And it came back to me because the second we found out that that second embryo didn't work, like, I felt relief for the first time in 3 years that I was like, I'm free. My body's free. My emotions are free. Mentally, like, I can move on with my life and not be stuck in this process. So turning it over was a huge thing for me. And it helped so immensely. And when we were going through the process of this podcast, putting it together while I was going through the IVF, and somewhere I read that you store your creativity in your abdomen. And I had this just aha moment of like, oh my God, that whole time when I was trying to have a baby, I was creating this podcast with my sister. And that vessel that I was trying to implant something into that didn't work was birthing this podcast.
Well, more than your podcast, it was like your intensifying your relationship with your sister, yeah, right? And your connection, and you weren't in the same city right. anymore, and a way of like bringing it back. Because yeah. the sister relationship is so important. It's so deep.
Yes.
You know, it's like I say, you can say anything to your sister. She's yeah. never going to leave you. You're the nicest, right. meanest person to your sister.
yeah.
You would never cross that line with friends because yeah. they would be like, oh, no. right. are you fucking kidding me?
Right.
You know, but your sister, like it just all in, you go yeah. there and you put stuff on each other. You, mm-hmm. sort of revert back to your childhood a lot sure. of times. You're like still 9 and 10 or, yeah. you know, yeah. 10 and 16, whatever yeah. it is. So I think, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but to me you birthed this podcast, but you really like went to the next phase of your life. And mm-hmm. that included a relationship yes. in a yeah. different sort of way than yes. you had with your sister. And
yeah. It was all encompassing. It was something that we'd wanted to do together for so long. My husband's a part of our business. You know, it became so much bigger than I thought it was going to be. And it made kind of looking back on that journey of like, okay, I didn't end up with that specific thing I wanted. I ended up with something that I needed.
Yeah.
And that I'm so happy about.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that.
Of course.
Well, I think simultaneously while Whitney was going through her IVF, it was like, you know, towards the end of the pandemic for me, and it had been really rough on my family, on me personally. It was like, I was sort of at my wit's end of taking care of everybody else and not me, as mm-hmm. so many women were. And, you know, I'd never felt a lot of fulfillment or ever felt that I had like a real career. You know, I'd worked, I'd tried to pursue acting and writing right out of college. It didn't work out. I ended up going into the retail world and the fashion business for a while. Then I got married and had kids, and I never felt truly proud of what I'd accomplished. And that always just sat heavy on me. I wanted to do something. I wanted to do something in a creative way. And I think towards the end of the pandemic, a friend of mine taught me about Buddhist meditation. And I just started meditating like 4 minutes a day and started seeing a difference in my mood and my wisdom and my clarity. And I kept on that path and it just got more and more. And I had it sounds dramatic, but I think it's true, a real human transformation in terms of my mental health, my physical health, my strength. And during that time, as we're building this podcast, and I think that concentrating on that creativity and being able to pour it into this, and it just all sort of happened with ease and with joy and with, I don't know, it just was so right, you know, it just seemed so right. And I've never felt that way about any of the work that I've done before. So Whitney talks about her meditation and manifestation. I was on a similar but different path, which I still do to this day. Every day I meditate for almost an hour every single day. And it's changed my life completely and my health. And it is why I can do the podcast. And it is why I can be a more present mom and wife at home. So that's a little bit about my wellness journey, mm-hmm. I would say. So,
and you do breath work too.
I do breath work. I just went on a 4-day breathwork retreat in Sedona, Arizona,
wow.
with a shaman who led 12 women through multiple breathworks a day, where it was very intense breathing, just like for like an hour and a half at a time. And it induced almost like a kind of like a psychedelic experience without any drugs. It was all natural. And it really did take my practice to the next level. And, you know, this man is all about healing your body through breathwork and like centralized stabilizing your nervous system with breath work. For me, it was more just like mental, but I left that retreat feeling stronger and more empowered than I've probably ever felt in my life. It was really, really amazing. So I highly recommend anyone who is interested in breath work to dive a little deeper into that. So yeah, I just try to keep elevating my practice because it keeps my mind clear and it helps with all facets of my life every day.
That's amazing. I love that. You're both so positive.
It's because of the meditation. I'm telling you, I did not always have such a positive mindset. And every morning when I wake up, I write down a gratitude list. I write down what I want to accomplish that day. I write down a reminder, remind myself to breathe, remind myself to stay in the present, whatever it is that I'm feeling that day. I light a candle, I do my meditation. And for me, that just puts me on the right path to trying to stay positive. Because I think that you can manifest whatever you want into your life if you set that intention and stay positive about it.
I've always been pretty positive.
Really? You seem really like have. That, actually. That's not surprising.
I'm a second child.
Yeah, there you go. You better be.
I haven't been. I mean, I've had major struggles with depression and OCD and all kinds of things. And I think that for me, it's definitely more, it has to be more of a regimented practice. I actually just got off being on an SSRI Zoloft for over 21 years.
Oh, wow.
So I self-weaned myself as I was continuing to increase my meditation. And I actually feel amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not encouraging people to get off SSRIs or antidepressants, but for me, it was just something I wanted to explore. And it's been really positive so far.
I'm still on mine.
I'm not yet.
Don't get off.
We'll see what happens when I get, in the next, I don't know, month. But I think there's something that you're both saying, which is that, and it sounds like your mom also found it in her mid-50s, which is that I believe very, very vehemently that purpose is the force we all need in our lives. And without purpose, it's hard to truly be fulfilled and thus be happy. And thus, as a woman, especially to take care of anybody else.
Right.
And I don't think it's necessary to find your purpose, you know, in your teens or in your 20s or even your 30s. And I'm not positive you are actually able to unless you really have honed in and you've, you know, either through your career. But as a woman, I think it's we really sort of blossom into this ability to find that a bit older.
I do too.
Which is why I think some women, you know, start something a bit later or they change gears completely.
Yeah, I think purpose can change and evolve.
Yeah, as you do, right? And I think that's...
But I want to say that for me, it was torture because I felt like I needed a purpose right out of college, that I needed to know what my purpose was going to be. Yeah. And I beat myself up for years and years and years. You know, I mentioned earlier, I wasn't happy with my career. I didn't know what to do because I hadn't taken the time. I think with age comes wisdom, and I was able to take the time to sit with myself and the purpose became more clear, or my purpose today, because that could always change, right?
Yeah.
But there was a clarity that came with that, you know, later in life. Whereas when I was young, I was just spinning and spinning and I didn't know what to do. And I felt badly because of that, right? I felt like I should be having some six-figure salary at 30 something years old. And when that wasn't happened, I was ashamed.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's worse today than it was when we were
probably
that age.
Yeah.
There's just, you know, I have kids in college and going through that process, it's like they are forced at 18 years old to know exactly what they're going to do.
Right.
I mean, a lot of
pick
places,
a major.
Picking, you apply with your major.
Yeah.
Like you get in through your major to college. And part is like they're 18, you know? How the hell would you know what you want to major in and focus in?
Mm. Right.
At that age,
you don't.
Quite the opposite.
I changed mine like three or four times.
Yeah, I believe as you should, you know? I mean, there's some kids who are really like know it, but that's few and far between. And so I think there's this incredible peace that comes with accepting that purpose one changes and can change and probably should, but also that you don't need to be so grounded in it when you're younger.
Yeah.
And with age does come wisdom.
Right.
And I think also patience, right? And knowing that like you have to sort of be able to listen to yourself first to figure out what your purpose is going to be before you can really make it happen.
And being able to recognize that all of those experiences
lead
you down the road to what is going to be your next purpose or, you know, whatever it is that's going to lead you to what you're going to do.
I think it's funny because, you know, mom always loved to cook. She was a great cook. We found that joy when we were in our 20s. and continued to do that cooking and continue to do it now. And that was always kind of that little grain of the purpose.
Yeah.
And then it evolved through those experiences.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's something so powerful about food. I mean, beyond the fact that it's nourishing and what's really, you know, in many ways keeps us alive and the nutrients and all of that you can gather out of really good food. But there is this sense of like accomplishments, you know, beginning, middle, end. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you see it in front of you. I remember I have an aunt who was in finance and she's this amazing cook and an amazing baker. And I used to say to her, like, you come home from a long day, like, how do you do this? She's like, well, what I do all day, you can't see any results. They're like out there, you know, in some weird numbers. But when I come home and I cook, like, you can taste and smell and touch what you did. And there's something really powerful in that. And I'm not a great cook, but I like to cook. And it's true. Like, you
bring your family together.
Yeah, everything. And you put something on the table and you can present it beautifully or just like slop it on there. Yeah. It doesn't really matter. It still comes from, you know, food tastes better when you have a love behind it.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
Definitely.
We like the compliments. Let's not lie.
Yeah.
we have our go-tos that we know are going to be what we like to call panty droppers.
Yes.
PDs. It's so good. Your panties come off. So yeah. We have like, we kid our mom that she only makes the brownies so that she can get attention from
Obviously.
The brownies, you know?
Yes.
And we recently had, I have to share the story. We recently had Nancy Silverton on our podcast.
Oh, what a dream.
The James Beard Award winning chef, you know? It was just very nerve wracking. And so Whitney and I made my mom's famous brownies because she just came out with a cookbook that said the cookie that changed my life. So at the end of the podcast, we said, these are the brownies that changed our life. And these are mom's brownies. Oh, these look great. Oh, they smell good. You know, she didn't open them there. Then when we got home, Whitney got a text from Nancy's sister, Gail. Those brownies were magnificent. And they ended up ordering some. I went and dropped them off. They wanted some because she wanted to give them to Nancy's boyfriend, longtime boyfriend. So when I dropped off the brownies, I said, is this going to be a problem? Is Nancy going to be mad at me because you're ordering our brownies? And he's like, very mad. It's a big problem, you know? But that was just like, I think for my mom, like the highest compliment in the world.
And she got
amazing.
To go.
Yes, she got to go.
They cooked them together.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Amy.